morning, guys. We all made it. All of your kids are checked in. I left my kids with somebody. I don't even care who. It's fine. It's this really nice lady from my church. My husband doesn't know her, though, so I was like, that's fine. Whatever. Peace out. I don't care. I do have twins. My kids are 6 and 4, as Jill said. Any other twin moms, multiple moms here? Holla at you. How old are your twins? 2? 3 months? Girlfriend. We'll have to swap stories. The thing about twins, when I have kids that are 6 and 4 now, so everybody still gives me the whole twin, oh, you have twins. All my kids are basically the same age now. So I am in a super easy math equation because everybody walks into the car by themselves. Let me tell you about the freedom that is my life. Everyone walks in the car by themselves. I don't have to carry anyone. I don't have a diaper bag anymore, guys. I just walk places like I'm 20 years old, just like strolling in without a diaper bag. It's so much easier than my friends who have 3, which is probably some of you, who have an oldest, a middle, and a youngest, and they have to do this very complex, like, nap time math situation, and, like, have multiple size diapers. That is really what they should tell you in high school, is all of your word problems are engineered so that you can figure out how to be a mom and be like, okay, if I have a 5-year-old that doesn't nap and a 3-year-old that has 1 in the afternoon and a 2-month-old that, right? This is the math that we do all the time. I don't do that math anymore. I just walk around with no diaper bag, like footloose and fancy free. Except here's a hot tip for you. You think that you don't need the diaper bag, and you're like, forget this, and you like throw it in the dumpster, or you know, not if it's one of those expensive ones, then you sell it on Facebook to your friends, because you need that money back. But you're just like, see a diaper bag, and you ditch it, except now I never have anything that I need. The diaper bag is like your MacGyver kit for your life. So like, you have the diapers in there and the wipes and everything. And now, because my kids just walk into a bathroom, everybody's potty trained too. See, my life is so much easier. Oh, I'm living this it's very new, so I'm bragging to you about it. But I go places without a diaper bag because nobody is in diapers. And then my son spills everything on himself and there's not a wipe to be seen anywhere. I have to like barter with some woman or something to like try and get a baby wipe from someone, or my daughter pees her pants because she doesn't want to stop playing on the playground, and now I have to carry a very large child covered in urine to the car instead of a newborn. So my cautionary tale is, as much as you want to just ditch the diaper bag as soon as you can, don't ditch it yet. Like, make a little something for yourself so that, you know, it's an emergency. These are the life lessons I'm teaching you today. but yeah, that's where my kids are at right now, 6 and 4. Everybody's potty trained. I have been praying. Oh, I have to tell you about Jesus came through for me. So I've been praying that this year would be the year that I wouldn't have to wipe any more bottoms. Because this is you guys, you can pray to Jesus about anything. He's there for you. So because everybody's potty trained, and the only like damage to my dignity that's happening to me daily currently is when my daughter shouts from somewhere in the house, both of my daughters, like, come wipe my bottom. And then I like very sadly, like, this is what my life has come to, is I'm at the beck and call to wipe someone's bottom. So I had been sort of praying, jokingly but sort of seriously, like, please let 2017 be the year that I don't have to, like, the end of it. Like, by the end of the year, Lord, please let me not have to wipe anybody else's bottom. And they still need help because they're 4. That's just how it happens. But they don't, they only want my husband to do it now. Like, for real. He's trying to sell me. I hear him in the bathroom, Mom is so good at this. she can help you out too. She knows how. And they're like, no, daddy. And I'll be right by, I will be right by the bathroom, like sipping my coffee in the morning. And they're like, daddy. And he's like, you're sitting here. And I'm like, she made a special request. And who am I to deny my child her special request? So the Lord has answered my prayer in a very unique and interesting way. He can answer yours too. I'm here today to talk to you about one of the commands Jesus gave us, about the command to love one another. And we often hear, I call it the art of seeking and accepting help. We often hear this spoken, we hear these verses from John 13, a new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. And we hear that command, and we read it as love others. And understandably so, if you look at the entire chapter, so let's go to the beginning of that chapter, of the beginning of chapter 13 in John. Jesus is in the room with his disciples. It's just before the Passover dinner. And everyone has come in from outside and they need to wash their feet. And back then, there would be a basin of water at the front of your home because everybody walked around in sandals. We understand this, California. Everybody's in their sandals. Is there anybody in closed-toed shoes? What's happening over here? Summer's not over. Put on your flip-flops. Call Rainbow. Get some shoes in here. We understand this. We wear sandals. But we walk the lovely paved streets of Southern California. We're not bringing in the dirt and the muck of the Middle Eastern region into the homes. And so they would have these bowls of water in the opening of their homes so that people could wash their feet. And in lower socioeconomic homes, you would wash your own feet. And that was a sign of respect to the person whose home you were entering. You didn't want to bring your nasty travels into their house. But in higher socioeconomic homes, they would provide a slave also to wash your feet. So this is not an exciting job. This is perhaps on par with being beckoned by your four-year-old to wipe a bottom. We do some demeaning things, moms, and we do it because it's our job. But this is the picture that Christ gives them. So he bends down. At the beginning of chapter 13, Jesus bends down like a slave and washes the feet of each one of his disciples, scrubs off whatever nasty they came across in their travels, showing them the ultimate humility in service. And that's the beginning of the chapter, and then the end of the chapter, he shares this new command. So we see these bookends, and we see Jesus' example of bending down and humility and service. And then we read this verse, and we think, I need to love others the way Christ has loved me, in sacrificing his life, in doing the most demeaning things, in sitting down and scrubbing people's feet. But we miss the other side of it, because to love one another as Christ loved us, it's a reciprocal and mutual exchange. Oh, that was early. To love one another as Christ loved us, it's a reciprocal and mutual exchange. One another. The scripture doesn't say love others. He doesn't say, love others as I have loved you. He says, one another. He's telling the 12 disciples to give and receive love from each other. And if you look at the entire picture, I mean, picture this whole thing. Peter is sitting in a chair. The disciple Peter is sitting in a chair. Jesus, Son of God, probably the highest person being he could ever imagine, the person that he holds in most esteem, his Lord, is at his feet, washing them. Not only is Jesus setting an example of humility, but he's forcing Peter into a posture of receiving. He's making him practice what he'll have to do when Jesus dies on the cross, and he'll have to receive Jesus' sacrifice for him. You know, my church does this thing. It's the angel tree. I don't know. Does your church do that? So, I mean, we want to teach our kids how to love others, right? We want to set an example of that. In our wiping bottoms and our cleaning of the house, we want to teach them how to be someone that sacrificially loves others. And angel tree is a wonderful example of that. I was walking around with my son a couple years ago, and he was, I think, 4 at the time, and we saw the angel tree, and he saw all the little ornaments, and he's asking me, you know, what is that? What's that tree with all the ornaments? And I was like, this is a legit parenting moment right now. I'm going to have like a good Christian mom conversation with him. And I was like, there are people, sweetheart, listen, there are people that don't have, you know, money or resources to have the kind of Christmas that you might experience or somebody else might experience. So we take us or other people from the church, we take an ornament, and that ornament says what they need. And then that person fulfills that and helps them with the money and resources that they need. And he says, I have no money and resources. So, not really the parenting moment that I was hoping for. Jesus understands that. He's here with these disciples. They're sitting at the table. They're arguing about who's going to be first in heaven. He's bending down at their feet, scrubbing their feet. He knows somebody in the room is going to betray him. The whole picture of John 13, if you want to go and read that chapter, it's crazy. It's like our dinner table, ladies. You're setting an example. You're trying to be like a sacrifice-loving mom. You're cooking dinner and not even complaining to anybody about it. You're just doing a great job. And then you sit everybody down and they're like, I want the red cup. And why does he get to sit next to her, and she's touching me with her feet? And that's basically the same conversation they were having at the Passover dinner. Not exactly, but very close. And in that, Jesus washes their feet and tells them to love one another. In that picture, knowing their selfish hearts, he tells them to love one another. And I think that's why we often read it as love others. Because we see in our children that base instinct to take, 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 right? And that is one of our first instincts, take, 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 take. And part of that is because kids need to take, right? They don't know how to feed themselves as much as we wish they did. They don't know how to clothe themselves or wipe their bottoms, and so they need to take, and so they just keep asking and taking and taking and taking. And then our moms, hopefully they did a very good job, and told us, like, don't be so selfish, don't always be asking for things, take care of yourself. And what happens is we swing all the way to the other end, and we don't want to take anything from anyone. We don't like to ask or receive. How many people here would say that they don't have a problem helping other people, but they're really uncomfortable with people helping them? You don't even have to raise your hand super high, I know. It's really hard for us, because you don't want to be the kid with the angel tree who thinks that everybody needs to get them presents. You don't want to be like the disciples who want to be first in heaven. We don't want to have that greedy heart. So we swing the other way. But that's also not what Christ intended for us. He didn't just set a picture of humility in service, he set a picture of humility in receiving. The humility that Peter had to have to sit and allow Jesus to wash his feet is another part of what God wants to develop in us. So why do we have such a problem asking and receiving? Well, a desire for self-sufficiency. We get a sense of worth out of self-sufficiency, don't we? Our kids do, and we encourage that, and it's good. You know, when my daughter's like, I can buckle myself, even though it takes her 75 years, I'm like, okay, I will pray right now that the Lord will give me the patience I need to wait for you to figure out your car seat, because that's a real life prayer for patience. But they want to do things themselves. They want to do things themselves. We want to encourage that. And when they don't want to do things themselves, we feel like we're failed as a parent. I was explaining to my son, you know, that I wanted him to learn how to do some stuff for himself around the house. And he was telling me how hard it was. And I said, but if you do it, if you push through, and if you try really hard and you do it yourself, you will be so proud of yourself. And he said, but I want you to be proud of yourself. I am proud of myself for dealing with this situation. We instill this self-reliance in our kids from the beginning. Because why? Because we are super selfish and don't want to have to take care of them for the rest of our lives. Right? No, but honestly, also, that's true. You're super excited. Your son got a job. Yeah, amen. Because now you're not going to have to pay his bills. Preach. We want them to go and do things for themselves. But also, it's a very American value. Self-reliance is one of the strongest American values. In 4 national surveys, over 85% of Americans said they would rather depend on themselves than other people. And about the same portion say that they rely on themselves most of the time. And we're proud of it. Self-reliance can be a good thing, right? When we can wipe our own bottom and tie our own shoes and pay our own bills. But we take it to the other end of the spectrum where we cannot accept help from people. Where we begin to find our sense of identity and self-worth in never having anyone help us. And that is so contrary to the gospel story, because everything about the story of Jesus says that we cannot do it alone, right? That we need him. We needed him to die for us. We need him to take on our sins. We depend on God for the very breath we breathe. And yet, we are constantly trying to do things independently. The other reason why we have a hard time is judgment of ourselves and others. Judgment of ourselves and others. We feel kind of lazy, right? And selfish when we receive. And we kind of judge other people a little bit. Brené Brown is an amazing author. I don't know if you've read any of her books, but she has this quote that I absolutely love. And she says, when you cannot accept and ask for help without self-judgment, you are never really offering help without judgment, because you have attached judgment to asking for help. For many years, Brown says she thought of her self-worth came from helping other people. But I would never ask for help, she says, which meant every time I was helping you, I was judging you. We don't realize that there's that correlation there. If we feel like it's being kind of lazy and we should just be able to handle it on our own, and we tell ourselves these things, then the truth is, deep down, that's kind of what we believe of people who accept our help. And that's not the sort of brotherly love that Jesus really paints for us, a non-judgmental reciprocal of exchange between brothers and sisters in the body of Christ. We can't really experience gratitude and unconditional love fully until we can accept help without judging ourselves, without feeling like we're being lazy and selfish or all these other things we tell ourselves. And we can't really give that unconditional love until we've removed the negative emotions from accepting help. The other reason that we have a problem with it is fear of being a burden. Fear of being a burden. We don't want to bother anybody. They have their own stuff to deal with. She has twins. You know, she's got stuff going on. I don't need to bother her. I don't want to be a burden. We don't want to bother people with things. I moved to Illinois with my husband a few years ago for a job to Peoria, Illinois, middle of Illinois. And I have this problem where I have no sense of tact or embarrassment whatsoever, which is very difficult for my husband because he, like, has a lot of embarrassing feelings, and he married a very embarrassing person. So I don't know what to tell him about that. I've always been embarrassing. He should have known in the first place, but whatever. So we were moving to Illinois, and we didn't know anybody, and all of our stuff was getting shipped out there December 3rd, very beginning of winter, possibly going to be snowing, which I don't know how to do that. I'm from California. How do I do things in the snow? I don't know. I'm also, contrary to what you may believe from my physique, I can't carry like a couch by myself or like a large television. So I was concerned about the heavy lifting situation. So we had had this conversation about, like, how are we going to get all, I mean, we had all of our friends help us put everything into this truck. How are we going to get everything out of this truck? Nobody knows. My husband had already started his job, but the only people he knew there was people he had hired. So he was like, I don't really want to be like, hi, new employee, I just gave you a job. Would you like to help me unpack my stuff this weekend? He felt super awkward about that. I don't have the same awkward feelings about anything. So I emailed a church that we had visited one time. I'm serious. I emailed this church that we had visited one time. I tried to make it sound like I wasn't crazy in the email. I don't know how that went over, but I did my best. In my head, I didn't sound crazy. But I basically said, this is who we are, this is where we're from, we're churchgoers, we're just moving to Illinois, we don't know anybody. I don't know if you have a group of young married people that might want to come to our house and help us move in. I mean, we'll pay some people if you have people that need a job or whatever. This church sent a small group of 14 people to our house on a Sunday morning that came and completely unpacked and moved us in. And in one weekend, we were completely moved into our house, had a new church, and all of our new friends. And they were the best friends ever. They were super, all the husbands were like, this guy's got a lot of Star Wars books. I think he's going to be our new best friend. that's how you, like, get to know people. They're, like, unpacking all of, like, your books. And they're like, oh, that's what they read. I think that we're in the same nerd scenario. they have the extended version of The Lord of the Rings. Okay, here we go. The movie one. It's very good. You should watch all of it. but that, when I've told people that I emailed this church and that I let 14 strangers move and unpack all of my stuff, that's crazy. Because we would rather just sort of struggle and be like, I don't know anybody. So my husband and I are just gonna take one box at a time into the house for like 2.5 weeks and pay U-Haul $100,000 to keep their truck, right? Because that's like our only solution to the problem. We don't think in these big, crazy things because we have a limitation where we are not going to bother people. I'm not going to bother people. I'm not going to bother people that I don't know, for one. But I'm also not going to bother people outside a very specific circle, right? We have expectations of some people that we can bother. Our spouse, step it up. You're numero uno on the list, sir. Right? Maybe your mom, if you have one. But where's she at? Come to my house. I just had a baby. Your sister? Your sister, if you have one? Or like your very best friend? Maybe, if it's convenient for her. Right? If she just had a baby, or she lives in another state, it's like above and beyond crazy. Why would she help me with my problems? We have a very small list of people that we don't feel like necessarily like it's a burden. But we even still feel like it's a burden with those people. How many women have I talked to? This makes me mad. I'm going to preach for a second. When you are doing something, if this is you, this is not me. I don't have this problem. But if you just had a kid and your husband is helping you and you say, I feel bad. Why? Do not feel bad. Do not feel like you are a burden to your partner in life. He needs to sleep because he has to work tomorrow. He does. It is also his job. You guys will take turns. That is what marriage is. That is what love one another is. Is that sometimes you will stay up forever, sometimes he will stay up forever. Sometimes he is throwing up and you're cleaning it up, and sometimes he is cleaning up after you because you just had a child. Like, if this is you, and this might not be anybody, if it's one person in this room, I want to give you permission to not feel bad to do life with your husband. But beyond him, beyond your mom, beyond your sister and your best friend, we need to stop telling ourselves that we're a bother. Especially when Jesus bothered enough to come down from heaven and die for us. And then tell the body of Christ to love one another. You are obviously important enough to the Lord and important enough for him to command his people to love and serve you. Another problem that we have is past rejection. And I get this. If you have put yourself out there, if you've asked your husband for help, if you've asked your mom for help, if you've asked your sister for help, or your mother-in-law, or a stranger at your mop's table, and you felt judged, or they just didn't step up, that is really hard to get past. And I think oftentimes that's where we cement that idea that we're a bother to someone, that it's our job to take it all on and do it ourselves. Because I already asked somebody, I put myself out there, and it was confirmed that I should figure this out on my own. Some of you were probably raised in a home where that was one of the primary values taught. I'm not here for you, kid. You need to figure it out and get out of here and do these things on your own. And that is a shame, because that is not what Jesus preaches to us. He is there for us constantly and consistently. Not only, he didn't just die on the cross for us, provide us a way to have relationship with him and then be like, but figure out your life by yourself, see you later. He wants us to come to him in prayer. He wants us to have continual relationship with him. He is there for us constantly. And he calls the church as the body of Christ to do the same. So if you were rejected at some point, whether overtly or you know, maybe the person didn't even intend to communicate this to you, but if you felt like you put yourself out there and needed help and did not receive the help that you needed, don't let that be the voice and the lesson that dominates your life. The last one is that we feel like we have exhausted options. Exhausted options. I mentioned that a little bit. We have several options. Husband, mom, sister, best friend. Some of us mother-in-law, but some of you are like, no. My mother-in-law, yes. Yes, she's very helpful. I love her. She's wonderful. Some of you are like, nope. We have a specific little group that maybe we will, and then that's it. We've exhausted those options. And then we don't have, who else is going to help me? Everybody else has their own problems. We run through this list. Everybody has their own stuff. I don't want to be a burden. I was pregnant with my twins, and another girlfriend of mine was pregnant at the same time. And we were due around the same time. I think she was due a little bit before me. And she had her daughter at 28 weeks. It was a horrible time for her and for all of us around them that love them dearly, because we didn't know how this was going to turn out for this little girl. And here I am continuing to carry two babies, and I just felt like this horrible reminder of her wanting to continue in her pregnancy. Well, her little girl is crazy awesome and is super strong and came out of the NICU and came home and was a tiny little thing. And then just a little bit after I had my twins, they found out that she has a lifelong cancer that she will continue to battle for the rest of her life. That they have to go to the doctor and treat continually every several weeks. At the time, it was a very new diagnosis. They didn't know what this would mean for her life. They didn't know if it was terminal. They didn't know how this would play out as she aged. But what they did know is that some of these kids die. And some of them suffer from horrible types of cancer that continue to recur in their whole life. And I am her friend, stuck at home, nursing two twins, two healthy, happy babies. And this is what she's dealing with. And so she texts me, "How are you doing?" And what am I supposed to say? "Fine." That's what a normal person says, "Fine. I'm fine." I mean, I could tell you all the other things. I'm covered in milk, and I just had two babies poop on me, and I haven't slept in forever, and whatever. But you have a cancer baby situation. I don't know if it was the sleep-deprived delirium combined with my lack of tact and embarrassment, but I texted her back, "I have thrush," which anybody that has had thrush is already like, it's a horrible word. If you don't know what it is, you can praise the Lord right now. It's terrible. It's an infection when you nurse, and we will talk about it later. I had thrush on both sides with two babies. And this friend of mine said, "Oh no," text me back, "Oh no, that is not fair. You are nursing two babies. I'm going to bring you something." So she goes out and goes shopping and brings me like this happy basket of goodness, of like all the things that I will need to heal what ails me, and like some pumpkin flavored things because it was October and that makes everything better in October. I mean, it was just this happy basket. And that was probably the most powerful example for me in my life, that I do not have exhausted options. Because here's what that exchange did for us. She is in a time in her life where she's constantly receiving. People are helping her. They're helping her with her kids. They're donating money. They're bringing them meals. They're doing all kinds of things and pouring into her. And she doesn't have an end in sight of when that's going to happen, of when people are of when her situation is going to be over. I could have just dealt with it by myself. I could have just nursed my two babies and cried in my room by myself. That's what I was doing. It was a sad situation. I was watching Walking Dead 2. I don't know, it was in a bad place. Don't watch The Walking Dead while you're nursing. What's happening to you? Maybe I did something to my kids, I wonder sometimes. But what it also did is it allowed her to be outside of herself, to be outside of her situation. It also brought us an intimacy in our relationship. Because here's a danger that we don't realize. If we sort of sequester certain people as not being people that we can ask for help, oftentimes everyone is putting them in that same boat, right? Oftentimes everybody is like, her daughter has cancer, they have too much to deal with, her husband works a lot, he's never home. They're in these never help boxes. And do you know what those women and people and men have, the problem that they have in their lives is that they never get to hear what's really happening with anyone. They don't get invited into the intimacy of friendship. They find out everybody else got to have these connections that they didn't get to be a part of. I have another very good friend who has twins and triplets. I know, you all, see? You all just had a little panic attack for her. But she will not ever stop having twins and triplets, right? It's not gonna happen. She has twins and triplets, this is her life. She is exactly the kind of person people will put in a box and be like, she's got twins and triplets. I am not going to talk to her about my thrush situation. I am not going to call her and tell her that my car broke down. I'm not going to ask her to pick up another kid at school. I'm not going to ask her to do anything because she has twins and triplets. So she doesn't get to enter into the intimacy of friendship that the rest of us get to enter into because she's in a box of don't bother her. We get into this situation, we don't even realize it, where we sort of decide a level of, we give people levels of, they have more problems than me, so I cannot talk to them about my tiny problems. And they have less problems than me, so why aren't they helping me with my problems? My sister-in-law that doesn't have any kids and works as a barista. Why isn't she watching my children and giving me a date night? And then you dagger her at Thanksgiving. Looking at you, Chelsea. I don't know.
I feel like that's the right name. If you're a Chelsea, I apologize.
But that's not... That's not what Christ told us to do. The Lord of all sat down and washed his disciples' feet. He flipped upside down what people's statuses were on this earth. And when we start to grade people and say in our minds, and we don't do it consciously, but we totally do it, right? She has too many things going on, so I'm not going to bother her. She does not have as much going on. What is her deal? Or even worse, not that she's not helping you. Why is she asking me for help? She has one kid. Figure it out. Right? Why is she having her mom over? Why is she having her mom over all the time? Her mom's been here for like 3 months helping her with her one kid. Figure it out. We need to stop this. We need to stop this. We do not have exhausted options. This is an entire room of women in so many different situations that can all come together and help one another in one way or another. But we need to stop, we need to recognize what we're doing in our minds and stop sort of labeling where people are. And we need to let our husbands off the hook. Can I tell you how many, I mean, like this is, I feel like this is gonna save marriages if you could call somebody across the street instead of get mad at your husband. I gave this talk at a MOPS group and then I sat down and I was talking to some ladies and they were laughing and shaking their head and I said, oh, what is it? And they said, we live across the street from each other. And both of us had horrible days with our kids in the last couple weeks and both of us texted our husbands, come home right now. Instead of, it didn't even occur to them to be like, I'm taking you across the street. We're gonna go across the street. I'm gonna ask my friend to take care of my crazy kids for 3 seconds so I don't murder them. Or let's both of us lock our kids in the backyard and let them, I don't care what they're gonna do, but we're gonna regain our sanity. This doesn't really occur to us. Because we have a hierarchy in our heads and we automatically go, spouse. And then we come here, this is the other sad thing that happens. We come to groups like this or we go out to girls' night out and we complain about how they're not helping us enough. And maybe, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's not every husband is perfect, I understand this. None of them are actually, because none of them are Jesus. But I find it interesting how we will complain to friends how our husband or our mother or our sister or our mother-in-law are not helping us instead of asking for help. So what can we do for one another? What can we do to remedy this situation? The first thing is we need to ask for permission to ask. This is like a very baby step. Ask your friend for permission to ask. Hi, my name is Marie. It's like Alcoholics Anonymous. Hi, my name is Marie. I have a problem accepting help. I would like to ask you for permission to ask for help. In some instances, here's what this is going to be. This is going to be, I would like to ask you to get mad at me if I do not ask you for help. Right? Everyone here disciplines a kid. You can discipline your girlfriend too. I had a girlfriend who was pregnant with her baby. She and her husband got, it was like 4 weeks before she was due. She and her husband got horrible stomach bug. Horrible, horrible, horrible. And she was vomiting so violently that it threw her into labor. And her vomiting husband drove her to the emergency room and continued to throw up at the hospital. They had to give him something to stop it so that he could help his wife. So they call us the next morning. Hi, everybody. We had the baby. It was this crazy thing. So I show up and I meet my girlfriend's baby. And I'm like, she's so pretty. I am so mad at you for not calling me at 1 o'clock in the morning because that is dangerous. Your husband is throwing up in the car. Call a person. You are in labor and your husband is throwing up. You need another adult. Right? If the two main adults are down for the count, you need another grown-up. Get one in there. But this is what we do. No, it's fine. I'm just gonna take you to the hospital. We'll just have a baby, it's fine. Why do we do this? Don't do that. We need to start getting mad at our friends when we hear about their problems later and be like, that is a problem I could have helped you with. Are we friends or are we not friends? If we're friends, you need to call me next time you have that problem. And it'll be kind of funny, but it's kind of serious. You need to ask for permission to ask. Because what happens is, the other thing is, then we share things on Instagram or on Facebook. Oh my gosh, this crazy thing happened. I was stuck on the side of the road and we didn't have any diapers and my kid and this thing. And then like I my phone died. You know, these things happen to people. And you're like, oh my gosh, that's bizarre. If that friend did not try to contact you in her hour of need, she should be in a little bit of trouble. Because that is what friends are for. Ask for permission to ask, and then if you're the person that gets asked, you hold them to it. Don't just be like, okay, I will be here if you ask me. Be like, all right then, game on, friend. You asked me to help you, I'm gonna help you. You're gonna get helped. We need to also believe in the benefits of the cycle. We need to believe it. Believe it more than we believe we are a burden. Believe it more than we believe we are worth more if we're self-sufficient. We need to believe that Jesus intended us for community. He intended us to serve others and intended us to be served. Let's do a real quick math problem. Wouldn't we love everyone in the world to follow Jesus? Yes? Everybody in the world followed Jesus. Every single one of them. And then they all read this verse as love others instead of one another. Who are they going to help? No one. Because the math doesn't work out. Somebody has to receive. And it can't always be somebody on the hierarchy cycle. Just because somebody is more wealthy than you does not mean that they don't deserve your help. Just because somebody has a husband that's around more or whatever doesn't mean that they don't deserve your help. We need to get rid of all of that. And just say, this is good for me and it's good for them. You need to believe that it's good for you. That it will grow something in you spiritually. It will give you the heart of Jesus. It will give you humility. It will remind you constantly, when you are accepting help from people, it reminds you constantly of how you cannot do this yourself and how much you need Christ. That is so powerful for your relationship with Jesus. And I know I kind of joke around about how I ask for help and I'm not embarrassed, but I struggle with this. I struggle with this. Because our culture constantly talks about having it together. You know? Our culture makes us feel like we need to keep it together. And then you show up at the park and there's a mom with like 7 snacks for her kids and she has her makeup on and her car is actually clean and you're like, crud. I don't think I'm wearing clean underwear. I am down here, my friends. Didn't even have time for the dry shampoo today. That is where I am at. We need to believe that there is a benefit for us as well as for our friends. And we need to believe that there's a benefit for our friendship. All of you have experienced this in taking care of your kids. If you nurse them or if you feed them and you hold them, your body releases that lovely chemical oxytocin and it makes you love them even though they poop on you. Did you know that your body also releases oxytocin when you have an exchange of service? When you serve someone else, your body has oxytocin. You're giving your friend like a hit of happiness when she does something nice for you. Give her that gift and bond together in friendship. We also need to expand our ideas of service. So everybody here has adopted children or has had children out of their own body or whatever, and or you've been sick or something. And people, what? They bring you meals. It's like the best part of being part of a church family, I think. I think we should just sell that. Come to our church. We'll bring you meals. It's delightful little casserole things. There's this lady at our church that brought us the best meal when we had the twins. And still, my husband is like, who is that? And I was like, oh, she's the one that brought us the tri-tip. He's like, oh. Like, she's still like,
Oh, tri-tip lady. Stay friends with her in case we need another meal. But we have like certain things that we do, right? We bring people meals, you know, like maybe we'll run, you know, bring them something to their home. Like we have very limited idea of the kind of help that we will receive. If it's like an emergency, we might ask for other things like, can you pick up my kid? Or can you, you know what I mean? But we need to expand these ideas of service. Because let me tell you, even if you, it's not only, service is not only when you are in dire need. That is one of the things I really would like for you to walk away with. It's not only for when it's like, I have done everything I possibly can to solve this problem myself. Now I will ask you for help. Service can just be, that would be nice if someone did that for me, and that's not lazy and it's not crazy. What that is that bonds you to that person. And again, it reminds you how much you need other people and you cannot do it yourself, and gives you gratitude to your Lord. I have this habit now, partially because I do this talk and I feel like my friends are like, so are you going to ask for help? Are you going to help us? Whenever I go to Target, I text the girls in my small group and I say, what do you need at Target? Because I already got all the way here. I buckled three people in. I battled them. I had to find one of those giant carts to put all my children in. I am here physically. What do you need? I'm at Trader Joe's. What do you need? And I'll boss them on text message. Oh, I'm fine. No, you're not. I am not going, like, somebody needs something. Even if it's like a gallon of milk, even if it is a loaf of bread. Because don't you hate it. You need one thing and you got to go all the way to Trader Joe's with your kid. It's dumb. Don't do that. And it doesn't make you a lazy mom or a lazy woman. I text them when I'm out. And you know what? I'll bring them stuff, and they don't even have to put on clothes. Stay in your pajamas. I'll, like, throw your milk out the window. You don't even look at me. It's fine. Here is your things. We need to think of service also as making each other's lives easier. It's not just for when we're in dire need. I read this wonderful book called Present Over Perfect by Shauna Nyquist. And what's interesting is, she started to realize she was living this not only in her personal life, but in her spiritual life with God, that she had stopped praying for things that she felt like she could solve herself. And I absolutely have seen that in myself. And that is why I'm constantly trying to ask for help and ask God for help in even the smallest things. Because it reminds us constantly that we need Him for everything. When we get into the habit of only asking for help when it's desperate, then we start to live that out with Jesus. And we live a life where we do everything and we don't even ask God to step in and be part of it. Expand your idea of service. Get people Target. Oh my gosh. Get people Starbucks. Oh my gosh, it's the best thing. If I text a friend, I'm driving through Starbucks. Do you want something? Yes, I'll get you something. No, 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 no. Now, if my husband's like, oh, you went to Starbucks today, I was doing ministry. Thank you very much. So, if our budget doesn't really balance, it's because I did a lot of ministry this month. I'm just saying. Fold laundry. This is blowing your mind. I had a laundry play date with one of my girlfriends. I would like to see you. You are my friend. But I have laundry. This is not... These things are not opposing, guys. Guess what? Your friend has seen boxers and women's underwear. She's seen little kids. She can come to your house and fold laundry with you. And guess what? It's so much more fun when there's another grown-up folding laundry with you. You don't have to tell your friends, don't come over because I have too much housework to do. You can say, come over and please do housework with me. And even if you don't, I'm not joking. Even if you don't get, it's not because you like started an army and you're going to be like, thanks for showing up. Here is a mop. I'm going to be in here. No, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about you're just going to stand at the kitchen. You're going to like kind of load the dishwasher together and talk. You're going to watch your kids make a disaster of something else, whatever. She came over to my house. I have two girls and she has one. We stuck our three girls in the bathtub, and I don't even know what happened in there. It looked like a murder scene later, but who cares? They were all in there, and we just folded clothes in my closet. My clothes got folded. My girls had fun. Did I get more stuff done? No. But we both had so much more fun. Our days were so much better because we did this thing together. Instead of being like, I can never hang out with my friends because I have so much laundry to fold and I have all these dishes. Invite your friends over to do dishes. And then you can swap it up. We need to expand our ideas and not be embarrassed. You want to be my friend? I have to do dishes. I would also like to hang out with you. Let's do dishes together. Lastly, pray for guidance and opportunity. Pray for guidance and opportunity. God will bring you people to help you. He's brought you here into a church community already. But it's not necessarily going to look the way you think it's going to look. And I think that's why so many of us feel alone, is because we've bought this world and the enemy's lie that only two people can help us and they can only do these two things and the rest of it is up to us. It's not. You can do so many things for other people. They can do so many things for you. And it will look so different than you think it's going to look. You know, the Jewish people prayed for a Messiah for years and years and years. And they had an idea of what he was going to look like. And he came, and he looked nothing like their imaginings. He was a baby in a manger in a nothing town. But he completely changed history. He completely changed their lives. He died for all of us. And that is the central theme of the gospel, is that we cannot do it on our own. If we're going to continue to grow in relationship with Jesus, we need to not just accept what he has done for us the one time on the cross. We need to accept what he is willing to continue to do for us in our lives and through the people around us. This year, you guys are starting off in MOPS. I really pray that this will be a year that you lean on one another and that you are vulnerable enough to ask for and accept help from each other, because that's going to change the trajectory of this whole group. In that verse, it says, "A new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." What a wonderful witness to your community if they could see the relationships of a group of women that are so interconnected that you do laundry together and you call each other to do the smallest things without judgment, without feeling like less of a woman or less of a person. That is going to shine a light to your community. And you will be known not only by your service, but how you accept service. I don't know about you, but I feel like I know a lot of non-Christians that would love to be a part of a community where they could ask for help and not be judged. And we need to show them not only that we're willing to help, but look, I also ask for help and I am not judged. Let me pray for you today. God, thank you so much for this time to come and spend with this group. I love this group of women, Lord. Thank you so much for the opportunity to come and spend another morning with them. I pray, God, that you would just be here, be with them this year. The theme this year for MOPS is free indeed, and I just pray that you would free all the women in here, Lord, of self-judgment, of feeling like a burden to others. I pray you would set everyone in here free of the expectations they have of close family members. Set them free of their preconceptions of what it means to serve others. And give them the freedom to lean on one another. Give them the freedom to ask for help. Give them the freedom to receive it. And Lord, I just pray that this would continue to grow in them an understanding of what it means to completely rely on you. That no matter how much we think we can do anything on our own, we can do nothing without you, God. I pray that the relationships that are grown this year would be a continued reminder of not just how much we need people, but how much we need Jesus. I pray this in your name. Amen.